agents. And good, you've anticipated Mr. Yancey is on by video. Can you hear us fine, Mr. Yancey?
Yes, Your Honor, I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I suggest you put, because you're not your bottom side on this, that you mute your microphone until it's time for you to speak, so that we don't end up with noises from your cat or somebody else who may wander through the room. Mr. Yost, you're first up.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Austin Yost. I'm here with my colleague Kelly Mull. We represent appellants, Arizona Board of Regents, and ASU President Michael Crow. I'm splitting argument time with Arizona Solicitor General Josh Bendor, and I'll try to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The state of Arizona has not unequivocally consented to suit in federal court for state law claims generally, or for the specific state law claim at issue here.
Can I take you through the same question I'm going to ask everybody in this case? So I want to give Mr. Yancey fair notice about it. We know that the 1984 Act does not waive the state's 11th Amendment immunity because we so held in the Ronwin case, correct?
That's correct.
And it's a matter of federal law. This is an issue that's a matter of federal law.
That's correct.
Okay, so it seems to me, and I think the district judge reasoned the same way, even though he didn't cite Ronwin. So the question that gets posed by this case is whether the decision in the Redgraves case, if that's the right pronunciation of it, constitutes the requisite waiver of 11th Amendment immunity. Will you address that question for me?
Sure. And just to briefly return to the previous question, Ronwin, I think, predated Redgrave.
But Ronwin holds that the 1984 Act, I don't know why I keep going back to the previous century, is not a waiver of the state's sovereign immunity.
I thought it actually held that the earlier Stone was not a waiver. It was before the 1984 Act.
Is that right?
That's correct. And the legislature codified Stone in the 1984 Act.
Okay, so I guess that's... Go ahead,
didn't
Judge.
It do something more than codify Stone? I mean, it did a lot more than codify Stone. I mean, for one thing, it expressed a general and broad principle that went beyond tort law, or as has been understood to go beyond tort law, with regard to the waiver of sovereign immunity in Arizona. And it also added an interpretive gloss that said, essentially, we should find a waiver unless there's a good reason why not. And then it put in a bunch of exceptions as well. So it did considerably more than simply codify Stone.
I agree with Your Honor, but it doesn't, the 1984 Act doesn't waive Arizona's 11th Amendment immunity from suit in federal court for
state law. What kind of a waiver is necessary, I guess? And I thank Judge Berzon for the correction on Ronwin. What kind of a waiver is necessary? In other words, our cases say it must be clear and unequivocal. What if the preface to the act said the state ought to be held liable anytime it does anything wrong? Would that be enough?
I don't think that would be enough. Under Port Authority Transit Corporation, the state would have to specify its intention to be subjected to suit in federal court. So it would need to say, the state may be held liable for state law claims in federal court or courts created by the United
States.
Does
it have to specify state law claims? You know, 11th Amendment immunity is 11th Amendment immunity unless Congress has done away with it in some way. And so the question is simply whether or not you can be sued in federal court, not on what kind of claims.
That's correct. I was speaking in the context of the 1984 Act, but if they were to amend it to say the state may be held liable for any claim in federal court, then the plaintiffs in this case
and
could have brought.
Focusing on immunity from liability for the moment, as opposed to 11th Amendment immunity, because they're separate concepts, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't Redgraves at least stand for the proposition that the state has waived any claim of immunity from liability?
In federal court, Your Honor?
Yeah, yes. Not immunity from being sued, but immunity from liability. For example, in this case, in Redgrave, for example, they waived the 11th Amendment immunity a separate way. They removed the case. So we were no longer talking about 11th Amendment immunity. And it seems to me Redgrave said, look, the 1984 Act is a waiver of immunity from liability, and it doesn't matter what court you're being sued in. But it didn't deal with the separate issue of 11th Amendment, 11th Amendment sovereign immunity, correct?
Correct, that it did not deal with the 11th Amendment.
Right, but they're two separate concepts, are they not?
Yes. I have a question. I am not at all clear that there is – I mean, what's 11th Amendment immunity is extremely fuzzy because we all know that the 11th Amendment doesn't in terms apply to this situation at all. And the 11th Amendment has been held to apply because of a notion that it was incorporating historical sovereign immunity. And I have not understood, or I would like evidence, I'd like some case law that says that 11th Amendment, that the 11th Amendment as applied in federal court applies to subject to suit, but doesn't apply to liability. I don't understand that to be your position. I think that was the issue that was left open by the Ninth Circuit in Redgrave. So I don't know if there is that clarity as to what's 11th, that 11th Amendment immunity doesn't go to liability, or that 11th Amendment immunity, it's a phrase, but it's not. It is completely tied up with what sovereign immunity is, because that's where it comes from. That is all that it is. It's constitutional by attribution of the sovereign immunity concept.
Your Honor, I was responding that they might be separate concepts, immunity from liability or immunity from suit. I agree that 11th Amendment immunity is potentially hazy, given that it as Alden versus Main holds, it doesn't derive from the 11th Amendment. It exists.
Well, but the Supreme Court has said in Alden that immunity from liability is a separate and distinct principle from 11th Amendment immunity, correct?
Yes, I agree with that.
So the state could waive all immunity from liability, and and when a case is appropriately in federal court, in the case of Redgraves, because it was removed, that means, and the Supreme Court of Arizona said, you waived your immunity from liability. You can't raise it in this case.
I agree with that, and I think Pennhurst has describes this in a way that's analytically helpful for me to think about it, that the state has separate constitutional interests and immunity about whether it may be sued and where it may
well,
be sued.
Well, but I think the interests are different, and that's what I want to take
Correct.
Up with you.
I agree with that.
The immunity from liability is a state interest, not a federal constitutional interest. There's nothing in the federal constitution that immunizes a state from liability, is there?
Under Alden, the Congress can't subject a state.
That's right. The Congress may not have the ability to subject a state to liability if it hasn't already given up its immunity from liability. But that's not – its immunity from liability doesn't derive from the Constitution, does it?
Well, I think that Alden suggests that it does, that the structure of the Constitution and they cite Article 1 and the 10th Amendment and
– Well, see, that – I think what Alden says – maybe be wrong about this – is that the federal government doesn't have the power, absent an amendment that gives it that power, like the 14th, to do away with the state's – immunity from liability. But it doesn't say that the state's immunity from liability derives from the Constitution, does it?
I think it does, because it says, do the states hold a reciprocal privilege with the federal government? And the federal government has a constitutional interest in sovereign immunity in state and federal courts, and so do the states. That's the reciprocal privilege, and it derives
This is quite a mystery, but I don't know if we need to solve it in this case. I was simply taking issue with the clarity with which Judge Hurwitz was stating it, but I think it's at least which is why it was left open in Redgrave. So let's go to Redgrave, because we're running out of time. In fact, we may have run out of time, and I would appreciate having the time. So go ahead.
Yes, and I'll...
We cut you off. You never got to talk about Redgrave.
I'll try my best to address it very briefly here.
I vote for doing what you need to do, so go ahead.
First, I think that it's important to recognize that neither the plaintiffs nor the district court represented that Redgrave is directly controlling here, and I think under the federal stringent waiver standard, that alone is dispositive. Nobody argues the 1984.
But why don't we certify this case to the Arizona Supreme Court, as did Redgrave? I mean, if your argument is that by the fact that we need to certify it, it proves that it's ambivalent, Redgrave did exactly that. So in terms of precedent, our precedent is that we don't know we certify it. So at least we have done it at least once. So it can't be definitively the case if there's sufficiently ambiguity to certify it, that means it's not that you should prevail. So why don't we certify it?
I recognize I'm out of time.
The question. Thank you,
Your Honor. The court shouldn't certify Redgrave because it doesn't do on its face what plaintiffs argue that it does. Plaintiffs argue that Redgrave rejects venue-based immunity, and on its face it does not do that. Redgrave adopted or followed a federal waiver standard when it was considering whether the state had consented to federal damages liability for FLSA claims. It wasn't considering or addressing the state's 11th Amendment immunity from suit in federal court for state law claims, and it wasn't rejecting venue-based immunity. So there's no reason to send it to the Arizona Supreme Court. The 11th Amendment waiver standard's an objective test.
I understand your first point, but not your second. That is, it didn't directly address where the suit was filed, but it did talk in terms of venue-based immunity, didn't it? I mean, it could be non-reciprocal venue-based immunity, but it was venue-based at least in one. It was rejecting venue-based immunity where the result would be to have the case go forward in federal court. I'm trying to just get it straight now. In one court, but not the other. Whether they would do the opposite and do that in this circumstance, one doesn't know, which is why you might want to ask them. But it was in some sense rejecting venue-based immunity.
I disagree, Your Honor, and I have two brief points, and I recognize I'm out of time. I'll try to be brief. The first
we'll take
is,
it out of Mr. Bender's time. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
The first is, in paragraph 18, the Supreme Court rejected a venue-based conception of the appropriate waiver standard, not of the appropriate immunity waiver standard. It wasn't talking about immunity itself. And in the context, it was saying...
Well, it was talking about immunity, but not 14th Amendment immunity. Not 11th Amendment immunity, I'm sorry.
It was talking about sovereign immunity and right. The appropriate waiver standard, so that whether somebody could bring a federal FLSA claim in state court would benefit from a more relaxed standard than someone who brought the same claim against the state in federal court. And the Supreme Court said, we're going to adopt or follow the federal waiver standard deriving from Alden. It's a federal constitutional right, so it's the waiver of a federal constitutional rights established by federal law, yeah. And that's the standard.
Okay,
but here,
and I don't want to take you too long over, but Judge Berzon, I thought, in my mind, asked a different question. On the merits, Redgrave said, no, you haven't waived immunity in this case, state. But did Redgrave adopt the notion that in analyzing immunity, the Arizona Supreme Court would no longer look at the venue of the lawsuit? I'm not sure that's exactly the question she asked, but it's the one I took from what she asked.
It did not do what Your Honor suggesting. What it said is we're going to recognize the reciprocal privilege with the state and the federal government and follow the federal waiver standard in state and federal court. The reciprocal privilege derives from Alden, and what the reciprocal privilege is with the state and the federal government, and critically, it's with the non-consenting states and the federal government. Here we're talking about a separate issue entirely. We're talking about the scope of the state's consent to sue. The state has consented to be held liable for state statutory common law claims. That's a separate issue as to whether it's consented to suit in federal court, and it has not. And so we'd ask.
I think we've taken you way over. So unless one of my colleagues has more questions, we'll hear from Mr. Bendor.
Wait, I have one question. Did consent to suit in federal court require that the suit, that the waiver be unequivocal?
Yes. There's no unequivocal consent to suit in federal court here, so this court should reverse the district court's denial of the motion to dismiss the state law claim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Josh Bendor. I represent the state of Arizona as amicus. This case presents an issue of exceptional importance to the state of Arizona. Has the state waived its 11th Amendment sovereign immunity against suit in federal court for all state law claims? The law is clear that a state's consent to suit in federal court must be unequivocally expressed in the relevant statute, and the statute must specify that the state intends to subject itself to suit in federal court.
So let me ask you a question about that, because I understand that's your position from the brief. And let's assume for a moment that the 1984 Act does not itself unequivocally waive 11th Amendment immunity. What if the Arizona Supreme Court were to find that it did? It didn't do that. I mean, I know you're arguing it didn't do that in Redgrave. But what if it were to find that it did? Would its ruling be binding on us?
So I think that is one of the interesting questions here, and I think may not need to answer it. But here's how I would answer it. Obviously, there's both state law involved in this question, and there's federal law. Ultimately, the 11th Amendment immunity question is a question of federal law. It's a question of the interpretation of the United States Constitution, and it's a question of jurisdiction and federal court jurisdiction. So ultimately, that's a federal law question. Right. In the course of getting to that federal law question, there are authoritative constructions of state law that the state Supreme Court is the final arbiter over. Often those issues are going to be very intertwined, and so you may have a decision of a state Supreme Court that's basically going to box you in and determine the federal law
question.
And
there are a lot of cases out there where the federal court has relied on a state Supreme Court decision, which says we interpret our laws unequivocally, waiving 14th Amendment or 11th Amendment immunity, I'm sorry, and therefore found that it had been waived, right?
I don't know if there are a lot of cases. There are cases like
First Circuit and...
Yeah, and there are also cases that look at the Second Circuit has looked at what the Connecticut Supreme Court said and said, well, that actually didn't go far enough.
But I take it your position in this. I asked that question because I think there's two separate questions here. One is, has it been waived? And the second one is, well, if we ask the Arizona Supreme Court whether it has been waived or whether they consider it having been waived, what would their answer be? So I guess why shouldn't we, that's a roundabout way of asking, why shouldn't we certify it to them and ask them what they think?
Yeah, and I think the simple reason is I think it's an easy question of state law, and you only certify hard questions of state law. I think if you ask them, they'll give you the answer I want them to give you, which is consistent with Redgrave, which is there's clearly not an unequivocally expressed waiver in the 1984 Act. So I'm not scared of you asking them, but I don't think you need to. The reason I don't think you need to is there's just no text in the 1984 Act that indicates in any way that the state was intending to subject itself to suit in federal court. The purpose statement of the 1984 Act says that the state will be liable for acts and omissions of employees in accordance with the statutes and common law of this state. There's not a question here about a waiver of liability. Defendants have conceded that if this state law claim were brought in state court, that they wouldn't have a sovereign immunity argument about it. The only question is whether there's sovereign immunity in federal court. Nothing in the 1984 Act suggests that. And to the contrary, there are several provisions which refer to the Arizona Rules of Civil Procedure, which are very strong statutory interpretation context that the Act was clearly contemplating suits in state court. So I think it's an easy question for the Arizona Supreme Court. I think it's an easy question for this court, so I think this court should decide it.
I want to get back to the 1984 Act for a second. The 1984 Act, let's go back one more. Stone abolished the notion of state sovereign immunity in Arizona, correct?
Yes.
Did the 1984 Act expand that or contract that?
My understanding is that the 1984 Act codified that, and then as Judge Berzon noted, it did more. It added various immunities, absolute immunity, qualified immunity, it set in place various
it
procedures.
Also added, it also eliminated any ambiguity as to whether it applied, the waiver applies beyond torts.
I believe that's right, Your Honor, as well.
So now I think, given that understanding of what the 84 Act did,
let's go to the right.
Of what relevance is the Ronwin case, which was dealing with a Supreme Court decision that completely waived sovereign immunity, and saying we don't find that to be an unequivocal waiver? How does what relevance does that case have to our determinations today?
I think the Ronwin case is helpful because I think that as it relates to suits in federal court, the 1984 Act does not purport to do anything more than Stone did, and this court already in Ronwin interpreted what Stone did. But even more important is Redgrave, which cited Ronwin and cites two decisions from the District of Arizona. This is in paragraph 14 of Redgrave, and approvingly cites those cases and quotes them and quotes Ronwin as saying that there is no indication that in Stone that Arizona intended to consent to anything more than suit in its own courts. And that similarly quoted from two District of Arizona cases, clearly indicating that its understanding of those cases was still true, not just as a matter of Stone, but as a matter of the 1984 Act. So the idea that Redgrave, which approvingly cites those cases, somehow waives sovereign immunity in federal court, sub silentio, with no textual basis, you can't find it in Redgrave. It's simply not there at all. And it's also not consistent with the way the Arizona Supreme Court does statutory interpretation, as evidenced in Redgrave and many other cases. It's a very text-focused court. It's not a purpose-focused court. And the argument that plaintiffs want this court to adopt is that there's some broad purpose evinced in the 1984 Act that suggests a waiver of immunity in federal court.
If it was so text-based, how did it come to the conclusion that it didn't in, well, I guess I know the answer to that, in Redgrave? I guess the reason is because there is some textual basis for thinking that it's limited to state statutes.
Yes, Redgrave, the question was, there's a waiver of liability for common law, for state common law and statutory claims. That was an FLSA claim, and there was a question of, there was a question of whether the waiver applied. And I think it's important also that, remember, Redgrave is a case where the court says, we do not find a waiver, right? And we are going to construe the waiver in the 1984 Act strictly, not to go beyond its text. And we are going to adopt the stringent federal test for requiring an unequivocally expressed waiver. So
whether
the idea,
or not they had adopted it or not, that's the test that's applicable to us.
Yes, but I'm just saying, if you were going to ask them, hey, what did you mean in Redgrave? Presumably you'd ask it a little differently. But if you're going to ask them, I think they'd say, well, look, we have the same unequivocally expressed text test that you federal courts have, and we don't go, you know, we don't stray beyond the text. The text is our anchor. There's no text in the 1984 Act that suggests the state intended to submit itself to suit in federal court. Over and done. I think it's an easy case for them, and that's why I think you don't need to certify, although if you choose to, that's fine. We will go down and have the conversations with them. I don't mind doing so.
Other questions from my colleagues?
If there are not, I'll save the balance of my time for rebuttal, if I may. Thank you.
Mr. Yancey.
Thank you, Your Honors. Michael Yancey on behalf of the plaintiffs. May it please the court, I'm going to dump my notes and dive directly into Redgrave. I think there's a little bit of a dissonance between how Judge Tucci and plaintiffs read Redgrave and how appellants and the amicus read Redgrave. Judge Tucci does not cite to Redgrave as a factually identical case. This court looked at Redgrave as a claim source case, looking at the state's own sovereign immunity. So Redgrave does not say that Arizona is always immune. It says that Arizona is immune in that case from a federal damages claim because those claims fell outside of Arizona's legislative waiver. But then it expressly says that where a claim is based on Arizona statutes or Arizona common law, the opposite rule applies. At paragraph 27, Redgrave says, where a claim is based on the statutes and common law of the state, the act's command is clear, absent some other form of immunity, and it talks about Arizona statutory immunity reintroduced after Stone by the act.
But why don't I read that reference as simply saying the state hasn't waived, the state has waived its immunity from liability the same way in either circumstance, but not pertaining to 14th to 11th Amendment waiver of liability. See, I think it makes perfect sense in that context. We look at the act, and it doesn't tell us, we don't look at the act and try to figure out where the venue of the suit is based on state law. We just simply look at what the waiver in the act is. But then the court went on to find that the act didn't waive immunity from liability on this federal claim. And so I'm having difficulties reading that reference as saying, therefore, it applies to everything.
So two things. One, back to the first part of the question, why not read it that way? I think because it would be incongruous with the rest of Redgrave. You said the why not read it as we've just waived everything. Well, that's not what Redgrave says about the statute. It says claims arising out of the Arizona Constitution or common law and statutory claims, those are what's waived. I think you mentioned the fact that we didn't find a waiver. Sorry.
It was with regard to what it ultimately concluded, it was basing it on the state statute. The state statute's express limitation to state statutes and common law and saying it doesn't apply to federal claims and it doesn't apply to federal claims in either state or federal law at court. It also made the other statement that you read, which is the obverse. That is, where it is based on statutes of common law, the act's command is clear. Absent some other form of immunity, the state is a permanent. So the question is whether that obverse statement is sufficiently at least provocative or suggestive that we should ask the Supreme Court what it meant, whether it meant it as to applying in federal court or not. And in that regard, I would like your comment, if you have any, to Judge Hurwitz's posit that there is some line of demarcation that's dispositive and strong between 11th Amendment amenity to suit and amenity to liability with regard to whether one applies and the other doesn't. He suggested that there would be, what I said would be correct if we were talking about a case that began in state court, but the fact that you filed in federal court was why it can't go forward. That's what I understood him to be saying.
You mean my colleague? Or
If you had filed this case in state court and it had been moved to federal court, I understand Judge Hurwitz's posits to be that it could then go forward. But because you filed in federal court, 11th Amendment immunity in the sense of a absence of liability from suit applies, and therefore everything changes. Is that right or wrong?
I don't think that I agree, because the fundamental point of Judge Tucci's order was Redgrave held that there was no waiver explicitly because the claim arose from a federal statute. And I think I disagree with my colleague on the amicus that had this claim been, a statutory claim in Arizona, Redgrave would have found the other way. I think the reasoning in Redgrave is clear. Had the claim been based on an Arizona statute, by Redgrave's own internal logic of not looking at forum, looking at reciprocity, it would have found that waiver existed for an Arizona statutory claim, which is this case.
The question I'm asking is, it doesn't matter what waiver. Judge Hurwitz is positing, and I'm wondering whether it's correct, that yes, there would be a waiver from liability, but there wouldn't be what he's calling an 11th Amendment liability from filing suit in federal court. And the question is that dichotomy one that we really, that's dispositive here. That if you would, and what it amounts to as a practical matter is that if you had filed a suit in state court and it had been removed to federal court, then Redgrave's sort of reciprocity rule might apply. But you didn't do that. You filed it in federal court. And the principles that apply with regard to waiver of suit in federal court are different and are purely federal and would result in an opposite result.
No, I don't. I think the result would be the same. And that's because the federal rule on 11th Amendment or incorporating sovereign immunity and all the complicated immunity arguments all combined into one, it's still a stringent standard where you have to make an unequivocal statement. And as to that, going all the way back to 1918.
But did the state Supreme Court even decide if there is such a distinction and the question of whether you can file the suit in federal court is a purely federal question, then why would we ever ask the state Supreme Court what the answer, or why would you rely on Redgrave as the answer?
Well, because the Supreme Court says you have to. In Palmer versus Ohio in 1918, this is 100 years ago, Supreme Court held the question of waiver of sovereign immunity, which that's what this is, by a state's constitutional provision or a statute, is a matter of state law, quote, as to which the decision of the, and it's bracketed, state's highest court is controlling. And that's Palmer v. Ohio, 248 U.S. 32 at 34. And that's not inconsistent. So, yes, this is a state, pardon me, this is a federal law question. The stringent test is federal law, but the point of the stringent test, as discussed in Lee Thomas citing the College Savings Bank, is to make sure that the statement of waiver is clear, but that doesn't have to come through magical words to a statute. In fact, if the state Supreme Court rules on a waiver regime, that ruling is binding. And as
okay, but let me ask you two questions related. The first one unrelated. The other side doesn't want certification, and you suggest in your brief that you don't either. Is that correct?
No, I believe what I said was I don't think you need it, but I'm
okay.
More than happy to go for it.
Yeah, of course you're more than happy to. If we certify it, you'll have to. So you'll have to go there cheerfully. but you're not suggesting that we certify it.
I don't think you need to. And
okay,
Tucci,
that's the answer. That's the answer I needed. But I have a different question, and it goes back to however Judge Berzon framed the premise of my questions. I want to ask a very specific one. What language in Redgrave do you think is a clear and unequivocal waiver of 11th Amendment immunity?
So Redgrave does not say that Arizona waives federal law. What it does is
well,
do what only
federal law and 11th Amendment are different things.
Sovereign immunity in federal court. I misspoke. What it does is what only a state Supreme Court can do, which is provide the construction of that state of its own waiver statutes.
Okay, and so I agree with, I'm not sure I agree with your reading of it, but I agree that it may provide a template for the way the court approaches future cases.
I don't think it would be a template, Your Honor. I think it would be a require. You would
okay.
The federal courts would be required to follow.
But you do agree that Redgrave itself is not a clear and ambiguous waiver of 11th Amendment immunity.
Not standing by itself, but
okay. And you agree that the 1984 Act by itself is not a clear and unambiguous waiver of 11th Amendment immunity.
Absent Redgrave, that statute would not waive federal.
Right. So what you're asking us to do is say, well, if the Arizona Supreme Court is going to be consistent with its logic, I'm not sure I agree with you on that, but I'm just trying to phrase your argument, then when the issue comes up in front of it, it will almost surely find a waiver of 11th Amendment immunity.
I don't know that the argument is, and I'll answer your question yes or no in just a second, but I don't know that the argument is in some point in the future, Arizona Supreme Court might rule this way. But to your first question, the answer is yes. If you disagree with Judge Tucci's interpretation of Redgrave?
I'm not worried about Judge Tucci's. I'm not worried about Judge Tucci's reading of Redgrave. He's a terrific judge, but sometimes we may disagree. I think what I'm asking in a roundabout way is that you don't seem to be arguing that Redgrave unequivocally waives 11th Amendment immunity. You're arguing that the logic of Redgrave would lead to that conclusion, right?
I'm arguing that applying Redgrave's interpretation of the statute, yes, would lead unquestionably to the conclusion.
Right. So that I think we're saying the same thing. So I'll accept your characterization of it. What you're saying is that if a court that wanted to be consistent with Redgrave when confronted with the question that we have today would come out in your favor.
Yes, and I'm saying that I think Judge Tucci was required to.
Okay, well, forget what Judge Tucci was required to do. We're reviewing de novo. So,
I understand that, but my point is to go back to your first question, is to answer it is yes. This depends on your interpretation of Redgrave.
Well, see, that leads to, I think that we have a different task than if we were engaging in an eerie guess here about what the state court will do in the next case. Because I think the federal cases tell us, including the Supreme Court, we need to find a clear and unequivocal waiver. And if I can't find it in Redgrave, then the fact that I'm almost certain that the Arizona Supreme Court might find it in the next case, and I'm not, but let's assume for present purposes that I am, is that suffice?
The fact that you think it would in the future?
Yeah, well, that's what you're saying. You're saying the issue wasn't in front of it here. But I've read its reasoning and its language, and surely when the issue is in front of it, that's the way they'll come out.
Oh, no. I think that's the primary source of disagreement. I'm not arguing that it wasn't in front of it.
How could the 14th Amendment issue have been in front of the Arizona Supreme Court in Redgrave, which was a removed case, and therefore all of our precedent indicates that we're done with 14th Amendment immunity? 11th, I keep saying 14th. 11th Amendment immunity when the state removes.
Because the fundamental question is still the same. Does Arizona waive under – it's because 11th Amendment immunity in federal court, regardless of how you get there, is a question about sovereign immunity. It's a question – and the question – and the test is still the same. You have to make an unequivocal statement, except the case law says that doesn't have to be in the statute. It can come from – an interpretation by the Supreme Court.
It can come from every case in which we've relied, federal courts have relied on the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court has said, we read the statute as a waiver of 11th Amendment immunity. You agree that the Redgrave Court didn't say that?
I agree. It didn't say those exact words. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So I'm focusing on the clear and unequivocal, not the implication or the necessary logic.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, I'm sorry. So I wanted you to say, why is that clear and unequivocal?
Because to find that it isn't, you would have to ignore how Redgrave reached the decision it made. So when it interprets Arizona's own waiver regime as being not forum-based, following the claim, and then it decides, hey, this is a federal claim, therefore no waiver of immunity, but... And the but there is, had it been an Arizona statutory claim, that would be a different answer. So if you don't find it there, that would basically be rejecting Redgrave's own internal interpretation of the statute.
I'm sorry. I thought Redgrave was responding to the notion that it would, if this case were brought in state court, there would be a waiver of immunity. And what Redgrave was saying is, no, the 1984 Act doesn't waive immunity from federal claims, no matter what venue they're brought in. And I think that's a matter of state law. They had good reason to conclude that. But that's very different, isn't it, from saying that the 1984 Act, either the 84 Act or our decision today, is a determination of whether the state has waived 11th Amendment immunity. I got the number right that time. Isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. Because, again, regardless of which forum you're in, the sovereign immunity is the overarching umbrella. The 11th Amendment immunity
just channels that sovereign immunity into a certain situation. Okay, the so question is still
your position is that any waiver of immunity from liability is necessarily a waiver of 11th Amendment immunity?
If the waiver you're discussing is a waiver of sovereign immunity and consistently construed through Redgrave, then yes.
Well, so okay, but, so, you're, but only so your position plain, your position as, is that the waiver of sovereign immunity in the 1984 Act has been interpreted by Redgrave as a waiver of 11th Amendment immunity.
Yes, and
where does it say? But it doesn't say that, does it?
It does not explicitly say that, but there's no way to come to any other interpretation.
Then you ought to be in favor of certification. You ought to be in favor of certification then.
Like I said, I'm not. I don't think it's necessary, but I'm not against certification.
In terms of whether Redgrave is itself an unequivocal statement of waiver or isn't, the fact is that our court certified the issue to the Arizona Supreme Court before it had the answer. So it was acting in a state of indeterminacy. And therefore, leaving aside for the moment the posit that the state Supreme Court would be incapable of deciding the question of whether the case could be decided in federal court. And I don't know whether that's so or not, but assuming that it's not so for the moment, then the fact that we don't know what answer it's going to give doesn't mean that Redgrave had to be an unequivocal answer itself. It means that if we asked it and the court and it gave an answer, then it could be an unequivocal answer. Is that right? In other words, you don't have to take the position that Redgrave is now an unequivocal determination, as Judge Tucci did. Our court in Redgrave itself certified the issue to the Arizona Supreme Court because it didn't know the answer. And then it accepted the answer. If the answer had been the other way, presumably it would have accepted that answer. So if we send it to the Arizona Supreme Court and it determines that there was in fact a venue, that the whole statute is venue based and it does waive all forms of immunity in federal court if it's capable of doing that, then that would be binding on us as an unequivocal answer. Is that right?
You're asking if this is certified, is the Arizona Supreme Court answer
binding? In other words, Judge Tucci's position was that there is now an unequivocal determination by the Arizona Supreme Court. That's not your position, as I understand it. Your position is, well, it's not so unequivocal. If it's not so unequivocal, then your opponent's position seems to be, well, then there's no unequivocal waiver and we win. The other possibility is, well, we should find out what its answer is before we decide who wins.
So two answers. One, I don't know, and he's not here, so he can't speak for himself, but I don't think that's what Judge Tucci found. He didn't find that Redgrave standing alone was an unequivocal statement. He found that waiver started with the legislature, with the statute, and was interpreted by Redgrave in a way that could only be a waiver of sovereign immunity in federal court. So
you agree that Redgrave was not unequivocal on this question and just didn't directly answer the question. That's what you said when you were asked.
No, apologies if that's what I said. What I meant was it doesn't use those exact words, but that doesn't mean that by its own construction and its own interpretation of its statute that the rule that comes from Redgrave isn't an unequivocal waiver of federal immunity. There is no magic words requirement. Now, does it have to say federal court? In federal
would it be an incoherent decision for the state if asked, the state Supreme Court if asked to say, well, yes, with regard to which causes of action apply, there has to be uniformity across venues. But it's also the case that the waiver doesn't apply in federal court. Would that be an incoherent or ridiculous construction?
I think it would be inconsistent with Redgrave as it was written.
Well, if I were you, I would have answered Judge Berzon's initial question, yes. Send it to the court and see what they say. But I think you treated a very friendly question as a hostile one, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Let me ask you.
I didn't mean to.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions for Mr. Yancey?
Yeah, I do have a question. If we were to certify another question to the state Supreme Court as to whether that waiver doctrine pronounced in Redgrave applies if the suit is made in federal court, why would our court be bound by whatever a state court says?
I mean, because that's what the Supreme Court of the United States has said federal courts must do. When a state Supreme Court speaks authoritatively and construes its own waiver doctrine, that is binding and that constitutes the clear statement of consent.
But if the state Supreme Court did not state clearly and unequivocally that its waiver doctrine applied in federal court, because as I understood it here, they limited what they said to state courts. If the state Supreme Court hasn't said that, then does the principle you just announced as a matter of logic require that we adopt it?
I'm sorry, I think I missed the first part of the question.
Well, I thought your statement was that in Redgrave, the court did say that there was a waiver, and it wouldn't matter what court a suit was filed. But as I understood it, the state Supreme Court has not said expressly or unequivocally that its waiver doctrine applies in federal court. So my question is, why aren't we still free to use the clearly and unequivocally standard to determine if the suit in federal, any objection to suit in federal court was waived?
I think you do apply that standard. The plaintiff's position is that Redgrave, interpreting the Arizona waiver regime, satisfies that standard. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, what's the language the state Supreme Court used in its waiver declaration?
Let me pull up the exact quotes real quickly for you. All right, so in Redgrave at paragraph 20, Redgrave says, our Constitution expressly assigns state liability matters, including the waiver of sovereignty, to the legislature. A little bit later it says, which has expressly allowed state liability under the statutes and common law of this state. And then it says, after contrasting that with the FLSA, which it found there was no waiver, was no waiver because it was a federal statutory claim. It said, however, where a claim is based upon the statutes and common law of this state, the act's command is clear. It is plaintiff's position that because the decision to find no waiver on the FLSA claim was based on the fact that it was a federal claim arising under federal statute. And then it immediately contrasted that with claims arising under would be the 1984 regime. That is the statement, and that is the controlling interpretation of Arizona's waiver doctrine that the court must follow.
There's also an earlier paragraph in Redgrave, however, that cites some of the cases that pertain to where the case is filed as being pertinent. It's a little mysterious what it's doing there, but it's there.
So I'm not sure, and I know it cites to Ronwin as approving what Rahman said about Stone. And then a couple other district courts, I believe, were also talking about Stone. I don't know how Stone is necessarily relevant to the inquiry before the court, because 1984 came after, and as Your Honor has said, it's plaintiff's decision and did a whole lot more than just to codify Stone.
So you think you agree the 1984 Act on its face didn't waive 11th Amendment immunity?
Correct, Your Honor.
Doesn't contain a clear and unequivocal waiver. So,
correct, Your Honor.
So to the extent Ronwin said that Stone, which was broader than the Act, wasn't a clear and unequivocal waiver, it seems to me you have to be relying on Redgrave. You can't rely on the 1984 Act.
So I don't know that I agree that Stone was that much broader.
Well, it said. It
was
said,
any broader?
It said the Arizona, there will no longer be a doctrine of sovereign immunity in Arizona. That's the whole reason the legislature had to in 1984.
Well, as to torts and
as to without, torts.
Correct.
And
well, it wasn't clear. That's why the legislature acted in 84 to cabin it in, if you would. It's okay. I'll withdraw the question because we've gone over time, and I just want to make sure my colleagues don't have other questions.
Nothing else here.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Bettendorf, you have a little bit of time.
Thank you, Your Honors. I want to start by clarifying one of the points Judge Berzon was asking about. A waiver of liability is not the same as a waiver of the right not to be sued in federal court. And a state can clearly do one, waive liability to suits in its courts for certain state law claims without doing the other. That's why you have the rules stated in College Savings.
The question is whether the state Supreme Court's determination, if there were one, with regard to the authority to be sued in federal court, as a matter of state law, would be a pertinent indice that there was a waiver.
I think it certainly could be pertinent. I think it wouldn't. I think the construction of state law is binding. Its application to 11th Amendment jurisprudence is not binding on the federal court.
So your position would be that if this case were filed in state court and you removed it, there would not be an 11th Amendment question in the case, and it would be a pure state question of sovereign immunity. Is that your position?
That's my understanding. We're only amicus. That's my understanding. My understanding is defendants have conceded that if this claim, the state law claim, were filed in state court, there would not be
a federal court and removed to federal court.
Right, because under Lapidus, removal constitutes
a waiver. In fact, that's exactly what Redgrave holds.
Which makes it why
that if you've waived immunity from liability in state court, you've also waived it in federal court. Immunity from liability, not 11th Amendment liability.
Well, I'm not sure if that's what
that's a fair reading, because it said you didn't waive it in state court, and so the venue doesn't matter. And so I think it naturally follows that if you had waived it with respect to this suit in state court, you would have waived it with respect to the suit in federal court, but not 11th Amendment immunity.
I think that's right, Your Honor.
If this case had been filed in state court, they'd be fine. Even if you were moved to federal court.
Correct, as to the state law claim. Yes.
So they just filed it in the wrong place.
Well, no. I mean, they have federal law claims, which is presumably why they filed it in federal court. The question is, can they proceed on their state law claim, and is there sovereign immunity as to that?
They could have filed two suits, one in state court and one in federal court. They just didn't do it.
I think that's the clear holding, right? I mean, College Savings Bank says...
I'm really surprised to hear you agreeing, because this is the issue that was left open in Redgrave, that if a case is filed in state court or moved to federal court, is that there is no sovereign immunity in state federal court on a liability.
My reading of Lapidus from the Supreme Court in 2002 is that a state defendant's removal of a case to federal court waives sovereign immunity in that particular case.
Waives 11th Amendment immunity.
Waives 11th Amendment immunity
so
in that particular
case. Your reading of Redgrave is, had the suit been brought in state court, it still would have failed because there was no waiver of state sovereign immunity.
Correct, because the waiver in the 1984 Act is limited to state law.
No, that's clear. No, that's clearly what they were saying. The question is whether they were saying the opposite. That if it had been filed in federal court, and if it was a state law claim filed in state court and removed, would it then therefore necessarily not, would there necessarily be no liability? Sovereign immunity, and I'm a little surprised, but you're saying yes, that's true.
That's my understanding, because of removal is a form of consent.
Removes your 11th Amendment immunity.
Consent to put in federal court, but the question is whether it is a consent to liability in federal court.
Well, it would be a combination of the operation of the 1984 Act, which waives the state's liability to state law claims in the first place. Then, if you remove to federal court, you have also consented to federal jurisdiction as to that claim in that case.
Okay.
I had one very small question. I think nobody addresses Dr. Crow separately. Is everybody's assumption in this case that however we rule, the ruling applies not only to the Arizona Board of Regents, but to Dr. Crow, who's, I think, sued in his official capacity?
Candidly, Your Honor, we appeared as amicus solely to answer the pure legal
question. Oh, because you're only representing the state.
And so I don't represent Dr. Crow, and I think Mr. Yost would be better positioned to answer that question.
Okay, and nobody addressed it in their briefing, so. All right, unless.
See that my time is fully expired.
It's over expired.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, I thank all three counsel and for the excellent arguments in this case and the briefing, and the case will be submitted. And with that, we will be adjourned.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honors.